I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're watching The Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guest is Nick Dunn, veteran author, but most famous for being part of the Chennai Six. Nick served in the Parachute Regiment for 6 years. In October 2013, he was arrested, along with 34 crew, and falsely accused of straying into Indian waters with illegal weapons. What ensued was 4 years of hell imprisoned in India. Watch this interview to hear the extent of resilience and mental strength needed as Nick and his family fought for his freedom. So do you think your military training helped you with this, or get through what you were going through?
Definitely, 100%. Without my military training, I would have gone into the situation clueless, more than what we were to begin with. Would have just gone into a little recluse ball, cry, and I did that anyways. But with being in the military, you assess the situation, especially when the shit hits the fan, and by God, it hit the fan big time. We had been thrown in a prison for a crime. We don't even know what we have done. We didn't even know it was involving weapons for at least a few months down the line whilst we were in prison. So you can imagine 23 foreigners out of 35 guys all thrown in one prison, and we're all from three different countries, different backgrounds, and we all got families in our own countries worried sick. We've all got some sort of military training, which helped.
How did it help? Can you think back about what it was about the training that helped you get through the day, I guess?
We were given my bed sheets and my metal mugs, etc. And we got my cell. My first cell must have been, on memory's sake, 8x10. It wasn't really big. I shared that with three other guys. So we're all in this compound together, and we're all in like separate cells, the 23 guys. So
with the other English guys?
I shared with two English guys and one Estonian guy. And we had our little hole in the floor as our toilet and a bucket or two to wash it away. We had bed sheets. Later on, we did, with the help of the British Embassy, get little quilts, little mattresses, but with the heat and all that, they kind of just shrink and go thin. So it wasn't great, but it wasn't the flow. So in a way, it was a bit of
luxury.
It was a little tiny bit of luxury. But you start to lose weight. We're averaging a meal a day, if that. We're not Gordon Ramsay, so we're not top chefs. I'm sure we probably gave each other food poisoning on more than one occasions.
And presumably, like, this is India.
Yeah.
And you hear about what goes. Obviously, the sanitation isn't the best in the best of times. And, you know, everyone talks about you get Delhi belly and you get all sorts when you're out there. I mean, were you guys ill?
Yes. It went through us like hot knife through butter. And I'm on about serious pain. Guys in crippled conditions because you are on low, your malnutrition is low, you're getting, if that, a meal a day.
Presumably it's not the cleanest of places. So
it's definitely not the cleanest of places. We were trying our best to buy cleaning products from the prison shop with our prison money, which was supplied so often by prisoners abroad, which I thank them through the bottom of my heart. Without their input in finances, we wouldn't be able to have bought, say, a pack of biscuits or toiletries to make your days a lot bit better in prison. But you know, having a military mindset, you do kind of waft things off a bit, and you've, oh, it's all right. But when you get seriously ill, like what we did on occasion, it's horrible. I remember being in crippling pain, lying in my cell, and we used the outside toilets during the day, obviously to keep the cell smell free. And I remember needing to go to the toilet, and my stomach was churning. I was like that making, and then I just got outside. I puked, I shat myself, and I just stood there crying for my mum. I was ill. I just was had enough, and I wasn't the only one.
Yeah.
But I was just like, you know when you're crying, but then you start and laugh at the same time because you realise what you've done. And I'm just like, stood there, and I'm like, I want to go home. I can't deal with this, you know.
Was there any point when you just wanted to end it all?
Yeah, when I got told about my mum. 5 days before Christmas. Getting...
So this was Christmas
2013. So we were arrested in October, and we got bail in April 2014. So the time we're in prison, it was...
The first time.
Yeah, yeah. We're running up to the Christmas, so we're starting to get down. I've worked abroad during Christmas when I was back in the army. I was in Iraq. Yeah. But I was in the military. I was able to communicate with my family. It's a different, situation. And this situation, I'm in a prison for a crime I've not committed. So you can imagine people's morale in that situation. You could scrape up half of people that were just sick. I was sick. We were missing my families terribly. And one of the other Brit guys had a visit, and as far as I remember, he got told to stay behind on my embassy meeting, and then my family's come to see us. So I got told to stay back on the last meeting before Christmas. So
you can
imagine how I felt. I was like a Cheshire cat. I thought, wow, I'm going to get some good news here. And Sharon just looked at us, and she just, our whole face just...
It was Sharon, sorry.
Sharon from the embassy.
The embassy, okay.
She just, her face just went blank. And she goes, I don't know what to do, Nick, but I've been told and instructed to give you this letter from your sister. And I just was like, what? What's this? And I've gone from happy to... Don't even know what this letter's saying, but words is jumping out. And it's my sister repeatedly telling me, don't worry, don't worry, she's okay, she's okay. And I'm like, who's okay? Why are you telling us not to worry? Now I'm trying to read this letter, and my mind's racing, and I'm picking odd words up. And I get to the point where my sister tells us that my mum suffered a double aneurysm 5 days before Christmas whilst in the hairdressers. And I just broke down. I just didn't know what to do. I just, you know, it felt like my whole world was shattered. And the pain... Anyone who's military will have this terminology, the red mist... Mm-hmm. So the red mist was trying to take control, and I was battling that. I was battling my emotions to try and stay from turning into a soppy mess on the floor. I think at that time, I was more shocked at giving the letter and trying to digest it all. And I was just like, what on earth? What am I supposed to do? Why? How? And it came to that mile walk. It was nearly a mile walk from the jailer's office and the prison to our compound, and it felt like a 10-mile walk because I was dragging my feet. I was battling the red mist. I was walking in a tunnel. I had Indian prisoners screaming and shouting at us, hurling abuse. I couldn't understand it, but with the tone of what they were shouting at, I knew it was abuse. You would get the good old racial slur in there as well. Stones were thrown at us. Obviously, I had pain 10 times worse than that going through my body, so I didn't really feel the impact of these stones till later on. And I'm trying to not lose control of my emotions, and I got back into the compound that we were staying, and one of the Brit guys saw us, and I just broke down and went for a wander around the compound, and I was just telling them what's happened, and I was just distraught more than anything. I was just to take away, to scrape off the floor. I felt like my life was over. Like, what if she dies? What's gonna happen? Will I be allowed to go for the funeral? Like everything was going through my head. So the Christmas was hard. It was very hard. Can't imagine how hard it was for my sister, knowing that my mum's in the hospital fighting for her life.
And I'm in a prison in India.
Fighting for my life. But it was difficult. I've never felt so much pain in my entire life.
And you're still feeling it now?
I still feel it today because it feels like yesterday. That's the ultimate truth. I have to talk about these things to show people that you don't need to cause physical damage to someone to really hurt them. This was done just reading the letter. I didn't know it at the time. I found out months down the line that my sister and my dad made a decision to tell us because they had to tell me. They didn't want to tell me.
Yeah, and it must have been a hard decision for them.
But they had to make that decision, just like the decision the surgeon gave my sister and my brother. They said, if we don't operate, she dies. If we operate, she still might die. So, two big decisions my family had to make.
You've only got one option.
And they chose the two right decisions. The decision.
It sounds like you were a really close family anyway.
Yes.
Has this brought you closer?
It's definitely brought me closer. My dad and my mum are divorced and have been for many years now. So my dad had to take, during the time that I wasn't in prison, I was never off Skype to him. I couldn't speak to my mum, only under supervision of my sister, when she would finish work, would Skype. Mm. But it was really difficult and it was so hard trying to communicate.
How is your mum now?
My mum's leaps and bounds. She'll never be the same. I know that. I've accepted that. It's frustrating at times when she's trying to speak. She knows what she wants to say, but sometimes it's quite difficult, and there's the odd occasions where she's under no stress from trying to speak and can speak normal. Mm. But then you're kind of shocked. You can't remember what she's really said, so you say that again, and then it goes back to square one because you put her on the spot. So it is quite difficult, but them initial first months going into Christmas 2013 to then going to the new year 2014, and we've got our case going through the courts, and You just think, what on earth is going on? Snail's pace, no communication from the company. The agent came to see, well, I think once or twice. He was as much use as tits on a fish. You know, it was just ridiculous. The embassy were fantastic. That was our way of communication.
So the embassy were, okay, let's talk about this. The embassy were fantastic. What about the British government? Because at this point, and I know we need to fast forward a little bit, because you did get out on bail.
Yeah, we got bail.
But you were only out, not out.
Well,
Maybe just give me that sort of overview of, because a lot of people would say, oh, but you weren't in prison. But
it's not the same.
Still in prison.
So we got bail in April 2014. We had to sign bail at the police station twice a day, which was quite annoying because you couldn't relax.
Twice a day, so you couldn't go anywhere, basically.
Practically go anywhere. The only place I was able to go to was the gym in between me going to the police station, because they never rushed when we're at the police station.
I can imagine.
They're just piss-assed about half the time, and it was strenuous, it was frustrating, but we had to do it. Mm. We did that for a couple of months. We got the case quashed in July 2014. This is the only time where I will openly say my government failed me.
I wanted to come back to that bit, because you served for 6 years in the paras, yeah?
Yes.
And you served our country. Yes. You gave you basically put your life on the line. Obviously, you don't think you're going to die, but you put your life forward to serve. And yet, the British government, what the hell were they doing?
I don't know. You've got to speak to my sister. She had more dealings with the British government.
And your sister was a real trooper. She made loads of petitions, didn't she? Turn up at Downing Street.
Yeah. Her and a few.
I want to meet your sister. She sounds like a great, great girl.
Yeah, her and the other families got petitions, put them into Downing Street to get heard by the Prime Minister, David Cameron, at the time. And like I said, I feel that the government failed with we had no charges. We had letters from our lawyer stating we do not need to remain in India during the 90-day appeal process that the Indian police were now going through from July 2014. And they said, we will see what they do. And we're like, we know they'll appeal. Look at what's been happening. They wait till the final last second to do anything, causing utter misery. So you picture 90 days. So we're out in India, financial burden on our families. Yeah. We obviously had the company resurrected, made a big spectacle, put we in a hotel, then didn't bother paying it, so I had to leave, and then we had to leave, and then my family then had to take the reins and start putting money into my bank account, so I then had to then pay my hostel. I had charity money from the British Legion, the Parachute Regiment Association, you know, I thank them tenfold. A few friends fired some money over to me. Great people helping me have a roof over my head, to put food in my belly for no reason but for survival. Because other than that, I would have been on the streets. I wasn't getting paid by my company, and I felt like I was let down by the government.
Absolutely, you were let down by the government. I feel really strongly about that, just hearing the fact that you put yourself forward, you served, you and the other veterans, because it was you and five others, making the six. I think it's, sorry, I'm going to say, I think it's bloody disgusting, but there you go.
And you've got, you've got 90 days for the police to appeal. So when it's getting close to day 90, you can understand how we're feeling. We're feeling pretty confident. some guys are packing whatever stuff, items they've got. That's it. Get a new, we wouldn't need a passport, we'll go get a flight chit from the embassy for that reason. And then it came to day 88, and then we got news from our lawyer that the police had put a paperwork into the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court were entertaining it. So you can imagine the morale had just been taken away from you. You were days away from going home to now extending this nightmare. And it was hard. I think more so hard for my family, because they were days. Days away from getting me to come home.
Being excited and thinking this was it.
Yes, it only had been from, say, October to nearly September, and a bit of jail time in there. I can live with that. Bad things can happen to the good people of the world. We know that. I'm not going to be ignorant on that. And yeah, I would just have cracked on with my life. Pretty shit, but get on with things. But then it just carried on, the nightmare just rolled on and rolled on. And
then you were found, and basically you were then found guilty.
Yeah.
And put back in.
Yeah, so we spent nearly close to a year and a half out of prison, and then we were doing this trial down in the Lion's Den in Tutankhamun, where it all began. And it was horrendous. I felt violently sick when the collector of evidence turned around when he was getting cross-examined by our lawyers, and he stated, apparently under oath, that if I'd seen the ballistics expert's report stating the weapons were not prohibited, I wouldn't have put the charges on the men. However, I didn't, but I still put the charges on the men. So he sent us to prison because he didn't see any evidence, because they withheld it.
So they basically took the paperwork when you had the paperwork on the boat, they took the evidence,
made it not turn up on his desk. So that was their way of getting us into prison. And we got convicted for 5 years.
But you got out, and you got out on, as I understand it, a sort of technicality. One of the guys, the captain, was ill.
Yeah.
And they reopened, or they looked, you had a judge look at it again.
Yeah, it was horrible. For nearly 1 year of not having a decision, going in that prison every day, trying to ring the lawyer, we're going to find out what's going on. When the embassy comes to see you, we had the Deputy High Commissioner come and see us on numerous occasions. We had the High Commissioner from New Delhi come and see us on numerous occasions. We had two foreign ministers. Two different foreign ministers from the United Kingdom government come and see us in prison, reassuring us that they're doing everything in their power to get us out of that prison. And my sister publicly made it known that actions speak louder than words. You can have 50-odd meetings with these government officials, nothing's coming of it. Something has to give. And unfortunately, I hope he's okay now with his family. It took a man to nearly die for my freedom. That is disgusting. They were preparing for a man to nearly die to let us out of prison. That is not how life should be. And I said this to the guys in prison. It'll take one or two reasons for us getting out of prison. It goes well in court, or someone will die. And I was laughed upon. Oh, yeah, it's all right. That no one's going to die, we'll be all right. Well, that captain had bone cancer, and he just looked like a walking skeleton. regardless of your opinion on him, yes, he kind of, I would say, didn't help the situation, but I'm not going to watch a man die, regardless of my opinion on him. He was like a bag of bones with a sheet of skin over him. He was awful. And our lawyers thought, right, we'll do a case for him to get medical treatment, basically to go to a private hospital so his family from the Ukraine come over to India to watch him die. So our case is at the High Court for our appeal, just sat there waiting, not even getting entertained, and his case is going up. His case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and his case was heard by the biggest judge of all of India, Mr. Supreme Court himself. He didn't even entertain the man's health. He just said, why are you still in my country? Well, our legal team jumped on it. Well, Your Honour,
you've got another 20, 30
they're still waiting on a decision for nearly 1 year at the High Court. And he went, right, I want a decision date within 2 weeks. So that was progression after nearly 1 year. So when morale was lifted, and a week later we got the decision, and it was just tremendous. I was in the Flintstone gym outside when I got given the news. It felt like someone had just wellied us in the stomach. I felt ill, but a good feeling. Yeah, I felt, ooh, what? I'm trying to digest this information. And honestly, it was, because we never slept the previous night of the court hearing decision day. We always gave it judgment day. Tomorrow was judgment day. And we never slept. So when we got the good news, we didn't sleep again. And then as soon as that prison cell was opened, I kicked the door. I was like, get out, I need to train. I need to tire myself out. And then we got told the embassy's coming to get me. So I felt like someone just sucker punched us in the stomach again. But to go down to the main entrance of the prison to see the embassy staff there waiting for it to take us out of this.
Hellhole.
Out of this absolute hell. You knew it was over. You knew it was over. You could see that light at that end of the tunnel that I never let grasp of. It was that bright. I was like that. I'm blinded. I knew it was over. I knew it was over. The embassy were taking us home. And we all got to the embassy. I rung my sister and she was literally on the way to Newcastle Airport to come out to India to see us. It was just an amazing feeling.
Nick, it sounds like they should really make a film of this. But you have
Tom Hardy.
Yeah. But you've written a book, which has recently came out in lockdown.
Yes.
Surviving Hell.
Yes.
I just want to ask, what was it like writing that book, and what was your aim for writing that book?
The aim on writing the book was, I had many people write to me in prison from around the world, as far as Australia, Canada, America, and all the amazing, wonderful people from the UK who supported us. Few people were writing in my letters saying, Nick, are you writing any memoirs down there? You should do something when you get home, and because we're interested in wanting to know your story, but the media have a short window and they can't keep up to date as much, so they're just reiterating the same thing to get more people to sign the petitions, etc. And it was it was quite cathartic doing it as well. It was hard doing it. Every emotion was out when I was doing the book. Howard, who helped us write it, had amazing patience. He would say to me, do you want to stop there when I would get angry or get frustrated or upset? I went, no, we carry on, we keep going. And it was the first ever time where I've actually sat down and had to remember start, middle, end. And it was hard. It took nearly the best part of a year to do it, but it was worth it because I felt like I was giving something back to the people who supported me. They now can finally, because a lot of the people were saying, Nick, when we found out you were coming home, we felt the release of the strain off our shoulders as well. And these are the amazing people telling me this, and I was just flabbergasted to hear people say these lovely things to me, because I was in a prison. I was just a regular guy just doing my job, and now I'm in the media because I'm involved in a massive international miscarriage of justice, and people are interested in my story. And to do this book, I'm getting everything as much as I can down in writing to give people the chance to, I wouldn't say relive what I went through, but understand a bit more.
Nick, if I ask you to reflect on those 4 years, is there anything that you actually can take from them, from those horrible, horrible, well, I'm not saying they're, take from those 4 years and think, well, I can take that from there. I've learned something, or there's something, there's one piece of advice or something that you've got that you can take from it.
I thought joining the parachute regiment was a challenge. It was, and not many people succeed. That's why it's the best regiment in the world. But being able to survive a prison stretch like I did, in the conditions that we were in, to knowing your parent, your mum is fighting for her life, your family are worried sick, you're going through a legal nightmare, you're fighting for freedom. What I can take from it is, it's made me a stronger willed person. I was always a stubborn, mentally strong person as it is. I think I've excelled beyond what that level was in the space of 4 years. With every positive, there is some negatives, and I am a bit more emotional nowadays. I'm very forgetful. I probably need a good woman to keep us in check. But with every good thing that has came from my negative situation that I was in, little negatives have crept in as well. And it is an emotional roller coaster that I went through. I am every day. I wouldn't say every day is a challenge, but every day it could be a struggle. But I try to see the positives of life, of freedom, of how my life is now. I've got my book out. I'm doing as much as I can to promote that. And I want to try and help others in bad situations that they may find. This year has been hectic for many people's lives. With the whole lockdown situation, I went through my lockdown. My lockdown was extreme lockdown. So you got taken to people who've got severe anxiety and rely on social activities to get through day-to-day challenges that their lives face. And with this year being the way it is, they're not being able to do that. And I want, hopefully, them to take the time to read my book, to then realise that your home isn't a prison. It's comfort, it's safety. I was in a prison. I did the horrible extreme lockdown. You don't need to. Put the TV on, watch Netflix till your eyes bleed. But make sure you're not you know, going through lockdown in a horrible, strenuous situation, don't let your severe anxiety beat you up, because there's people out there who are suffering this year because of that. And, you know, I just want basically them to, you know, get through day to day on a better term.
And Nick, where can people get your book? We're going to put the link in the show notes.
Amazon's the place. Amazon's the place. You can personally buy copies from myself. I do order books, so a lot of people do tend to
get signed.
Yes, if they want a signed copy. If the person who want a paperback signed, ask me, no problem. If they want a hardback signed, ask me. But you can buy both on Amazon. You can go to Waterstones, WH Smith. There's other third party outlets there as well, but Amazon seems to be the best.
Well, we're going
to
put the link in the show notes, and we've already reached my final question, and it's gone really fast, Nick. If you were to write a message in a bottle for future generations to find,
yes,
what would that message be?
My message in a bottle for some lucky person or persons to find washed up on a beach would be, and it's came more of apparent this year with everything that's gone on, is in every negative, there's a positive. Maybe a small positive, but it's a positive. And you've got to take that positive and let it roll and watch before your eyes. It becomes larger than life. Because I've gone through a negative part in my life, and the people that I've came to meet and the stuff that I've done has been positive. So it must be true. In every negative, there's a positive.
Nick, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
No problem.
Thank you.
No problem.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday. So hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.